Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview, is brought to you in part by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. Take it away, Benny J.
It's bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It is Tuesday, October 8th. You're probably hearing this Saturday, whatever the date is, or whenever. It's a podcast. You can listen to it anytime. Just like to point this out, that this show is being pre-taped, and we're going to drop it for this weekend. As we always do with bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show, I ask our distinguished guests to introduce themselves. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Joe Colley. The Chicago Sun-Times.
Joe Colley.
From Ohio, so that, you know, that's what you got to do. You got to emphasize the.
The?
Yeah.
Joe Colley is a sports writer on the Chicago Sun-Times. He aborted the introduction. I'll do the rest of it. He covers the Bulls, my beloved Chicago Bulls. Everybody knows I love the Chicago Bulls. Yes, this is a political talk show, but Dennis allowed me to have Colley come on to talk about the Bulls. We had you once before,
right. And
it did very well for a political talk show. So even if it didn't do well, everybody knows I love the Bulls. So, Joe, thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
Let's talk a little Chicago Bulls. All right, just let's take a moment. It's been since July, since you were last on the show in July. Just introduce yourself one more time. You cover the Bulls, but before that, you covered the White Sox.
I covered the White Sox I was at the Daily Southtown. I originally left Ohio. I covered Ohio State for 3 years and then left Ohio to come here and cover the Cubs for about 3 weeks. And for the Daily Southtown, and then they switched me to the White Sox when TJ Quinn left to go to the East Coast and eventually became an ESPN guy. But switched to the White Sox and did the White Sox, started with Jerry Manuel as the manager and went all the way through Ozzy. And by the time Ozzy was traded, our esteemed sports editor, Chris DeLuca, decided that there were so many burnt bridges there with the White Sox that it was time to get me out of there. So this is year 7 or 8 for the Bulls now. I did a column for 2 years, was a columnist, and then now I'm doing the Bulls.
I'd also like to point out the ownership of the White Sox is the same as the ownership of the Bulls.
Right.
So it's
But Daddy Jerry isn't around the Bulls as much as he is around the White Sox.
Jerry being Reinsdorf, the owner of the Bulls.
Michael Reinsdorf has,
And I put this out the last time that Joe was on the show, the first time Joe was on the show. Joe Colley covers the Bulls sort of the way I cover City Hall. And the only difference is that he has to go into the locker room and confront the people he writes about.
Right.
There is no locker room for me to go to. What's that like after you've written an article or a column critical of the Bulls?
I think as long as it's fair, if they want to discuss it, they discuss it. If they don't, they don't. I mean, you know, I've had some good ones. Orlando Cabrera and I had to be separated in Cleveland. Carlos Lee and I had about a 10-minute shouting match in the dugout.
Carlos Lee, the former first baseman.
Former outfielder for the White Sox, yeah. So with the Bulls, I mean, I haven't had, you know, Pax and I have had our moments where we don't talk for a month or two. But, you know, lately everything's been fairly solid. I mean, they know... I think they understand that my job is not to kiss their ass, and my job is to be checks and balances for the fans and decide if the fans want to buy into that product. And I always told them, hey, if you want me to be softer, don't charge for admission. And that was always my thing. And I would tell that to Jerry back when in the White Sox days. And, you know, it's the sad thing is I think that's a dying trait in sports writing. You're seeing teams take control of the journalists more. You're seeing teams try to control the message more, whether it's on their website or their social media feed. And you're seeing teams now understand that it's easy to persuade journalists. Now you give them a couple breadcrumbs. Hey, pull them aside. Hey, we're going to sign this guy to a 10-day contract. I'm only giving that to you. So you think you're getting this exclusive. but it's all, you know, it's all Fugazi. It's all a mirage because that's not.
Does it matter to you if you get the exclusive?
Do you still like?
No, I mean, you know, when I jumped to the Bulls, you know, I mean, Casey Johnson from the Tribune was an institution. So, you know, you're battling a guy that's been there for, you know, 20 some plus years and is a professional and great at his craft. My whole thing, I always looked at it this way. You know, I'm not from Chicago. There's a lot of born Chicago media in this pool, which I always had a problem with. I think you cover a team better when you didn't grow up a fan of it. So I like my mentality with that. And I think I came into this beat and said, okay, I have to be who I am. And I think eventually players and people identify that, where if it's something that is newsy or more of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, KC's going to get that. If it's more bitching about the situation or complaining about the way things are, guys would pull me aside because they know that I am not going to pull punches when it comes to the front office or other teammates. And, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with the relationship. I mean, you know, the latest example, I mean, Jimmy Butler and I built a pretty solid relationship because, you know, it's no secret that he and Pau Gasol were in one corner and Derrick Rose and Joakim were in another. And that civil war that was going on in Fred Hoiberg's first year that was basically created by general manager Gar Foreman, you know, lying to guys, telling this group this something and this other group something. And so, yeah, I had no problem reporting that because to me that was going to hit a wall and eventually cost this team, and it did. I mean, we saw that in the playoffs.
Now, yes, we could talk about that play. That was the playoff 2006. I don't know who you can blame for the...
They beat Milwaukee in the first round, and then they lost to the Cavs in the second round.
That is correct. All right. So, well, that was 2015.
Thibodeau's last year
playoff. All right. So when you're, and I know you don't want to give away sources, but when you're negotiating a very controversial situation like the one you just described, where teams into factions and individuals are talking to you, what are sort of the ground rules that you lay out?
I know what you're saying. The main thing is, I mean, look, I was the first one to report the whole Ozzie Kenny civil war. A year before it happened, Ozzie Guillen and Ken Williams, the general manager. And they were in deny, and leave me on Kali Island. Then I look like the only ass that's out there reporting it, and it must be a lie.
Yeah.
And that was Kenny's spin. But it became so volatile and so many pieces involved. You had Don Cooper cutting a deal behind the other coaches' backs to get an extension, while he was the guy that would call us every offseason, hey, my contract's up. Can you guys do something? I'm thinking of buying this house in North Carolina. Can you guys do something to get me an extension and all this stuff? And all of a sudden, this dude, and that's why Ozzie called him the Judas, because this dude becomes a snitch for Ken Williams, signs a deal behind all the other coaches' back, and then is in that coach's room for months, listening to them bitch about Ken Williams and the contract extension, and where do you think he's going with all that information? I mean, so, you know, it became so volatile, Jerry Reinsdorf had to come out in a statement and admit there was a problem. A year, you know, and the Tribune knew it was going on, but they just wanted to kind of turn an eye, and they marched little David Hall out there to be Kenny's mouthpiece, and it was the Sun-Times versus the Tribune in this battle because they knew what side I was on, and so they had David take the other side. And to me, it always comes down to, it's not about a side if you're on a coach, it's about what's right and what's wrong. And in that instance, Ozzie was right. Kenny was wrong. Kenny made it personal. He had professional envy over all the glam and the you know, the attention Ozzie was getting, and you know that's why I nicknamed him Hollywood. I mean, you know, Kenny became Hollywood. He wanted to date actresses. I won't say their names. I've said them before on the air, but you know, on the score. But we don't need to redo that. That, but I mean, that's him. So it's not about whose side you're going to pick. It's going to be who's right and who's wrong. Well, and in the Jimmy Derrick thing, it was Jimmy and Powell busting their ass every day in practice, and Derek and Joakim getting massages every day in the front office telling them, don't listen to Tom. We'll take care of your minutes. Tom doesn't care about your future. You know, hiring Derek's rehab girl, that Jen Swanson, and having her come in. And I'm at, the players would come up to me all the time. Jen doesn't even realize I'm on this team. She realizes there's two people on this team. It was Derek and then eventually Joakim. and she could care. And that was the one that was in charge of all the players' health. Come on.
But do players know enough to come up when they come up to a reporter and say, this is off the record, but I want to tell you X, Y, Z. Is that, that's what I was getting at.
Oh, yeah, they order code reds all the time. Yeah, oh, there's code reds order all the time. The Cabrera story was, and it's so many years now, Jermaine Dye pulled me aside and said, yeah, this dude is calling during the game to not have the scorekeeper just change a call that he made, but to have it put on his own teammate. Usually you call up and say, yeah, no, it's don't give it an error. It was a hit. He was saying, yeah, it was an error, but it was Toby Hall, the catcher's fault. I mean, so that's, you know, that's unbelievable. Yeah. So I wrote that story and wrote a whole column about it. And that
well, one of the fun things I do, and we're going, but I let's take this to this tangent. One of the fun things I do when I read your stories is try to figure out who the source is. Because you'll say, like, for instance, I'm trying to think, oh, when there was the Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose situation where they were obviously could not get along.
Right.
It was so obvious. And so you would phrase it something like somebody close to Jimmy Butler.
All these guys have, baseball is different. The NBA, all these guys have camps. And that's the best way to call them. Because, you know, Jimmy would be like, hey, you know, I want you to meet my brother. And then a white kid would walk up to you and then you'd be like, but Jimmy called all of them his brother, whether it was the adopted brother or whether it was a trainer. These were all his brothers. That was his family. And if you know his background, you understand that family to him is different than what you and I, you know, consider family. Mm-hmm. And so all these guys have camps and people that are close to them. That's where a lot of this stuff comes from. You know, the player may hint stuff to you, but nobody wants that, especially in the NBA locker room where it's so few players. Nobody wants that footprint somehow leading to them. So their camps and their guys do a lot of the, hey, you know, I just want to let you know this is what's going on. That's how, in my experience, the NBA, it's mostly coming out of camps.
All right, before we take a little deeper dive in this year's Chicago Bulls, my beloved Chicago Bulls, I'm predicting, by the way, that they'll be world champions, and Joe will join me in Grant Park in July. Try not to laugh too much, Joe. Before we get the deep dive into that, this is something that's been on my mind, and I teased you with this before we went on, and so let's just talk about it. I'm also a Bears fan. I'm exceedingly frustrated with the Chicago Bears. I assume you follow them at least by reading the articles.
Yeah.
And this season has been, even though it's still early. It's been very disappointing to watch their play. And I've been thinking more and more and saying this: the worst single decision by a Chicago general manager in the 21st century, so that begins in 2000, all right. The 21st century, it has been, and I say this knowing everything the Bulls have done, okay, because I'm obsessive about the Bulls, has been the decision by Ryan Pace of the Chicago Bears to trade up for quarterback Mitch Trubisky when he could have taken Patrick Mahomes.
Or might not have traded up, might not have needed to even trade up.
That's correct. Mahomes was taken in with the 10th, I believe.
Right.
Don't quote me. Maybe the 8th. Pace went from the 3rd to the 2nd to get Mitch Trubisky. And clearly nobody wanted him. All right. So I would say that's the number one worst decision. I could argue that Brock Verbroglio, which is way before your time, you were still in Ohio, if you were even born when Brock versus Verbroglio occurred to the Cubs, was the worst decision of the 20th century. So do you, what's your worst decision by a Chicago general manager?
I mean, that's, you know, the quarterback thing is tough because we're seeing it play out, but who knows what he would have become with the Bears? Who knows if Andy Reid's system was just perfectly tailor-made for what Patrick Mahomes has become. So that one you can always say, okay, but, you know, was he the right time at the right guy at the right time? Would he have translated to what the Bears are trying to do offensively? So I get it, because you get to see it every Sunday and go, oh my goodness. To me, some of the bigger ones were the firing of Thibodeau, I think, really set the Bulls back. Then you could go into things of not listening to Thibodeau and Marcus Teague over Draymond Green, things like that. I mean, could you imagine if they would have had Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green on that team with Thibodeau coaching those two and what he would have gotten out of those two? I mean, that's big. But, you know, I still can't get over the fact that 2005, you win a World Series. You are on top of the town. You have a chance to kind of put a stranglehold on the division. You had an owner who was willing to spend in a division that is, you know, usually pretty cheap. And you couldn't get over petty little high school stuff.
You're about the White Sox.
Talking about the White Sox. And you let it spiral so bad that one of you had to leave town, and they decided that Ozzie was the one. To me, that, because, yeah. I mean, they, you know, the following year after World Series, yeah, they didn't make the playoffs, but again, they won, what, 90 games and didn't make the playoffs because the Twins went on that hot streak. And then in 2008, Ozzie took a team that really wasn't a playoff team back to the playoffs. I mean, and that said something about who he was. And Ken Williams inherited a playoff team. Everyone forgets Jerry Manuel took them to the playoffs in 2000. Kenny Williams had a shiv in Ron Shuler's back the entire time, you know, working it and finally poking it in, gets the job, and they don't go back to World Series till Ozzie comes in and says, hey, let Maglio go, I don't care, and Carlos Lee's not a winning baseball player, get rid of him.
So you would say the machinations of the White Sox post-World Series 2005
post-05
is
the
worst.
Petty stuff that went on and the decisions made after that.
Well, then I would say, to trump that ace, the worst of all time, if you're going to allow petty decisions to be in this, as opposed to one single decision like trading this guy for
trading that guy.
I would say allowing Jerry Krause in 1998 to declare that this was the last year.
Yeah.
That's bad. The worst.
But again, that gets back to the same old of Jerry Reinsdorf always empowering the general manager over the coach or the manager.
Yeah.
And that goes back to letting Hawk Harrelson fire Tony La Russa.
Yeah.
You could look back and say that was one of the worst decisions in Chicago, of letting a general manager fire a Hall of Fame manager because he didn't agree with your ideas of having two different hitting coaches, one for power hitters and one for slap hitters. And, you know, that's kind of stuff that Hawk wanted to do. And Tony La Russa was like, yeah, no, bruh.
All right, let's get down to the Bulls. And last night was their first preseason game. Last night being Monday, everybody's hearing this. The show will be at Saturday, but they played the Bucks at the Chicago Stadium. I call it the Chicago Stadium.
I
still call it the Chicago
Stadium. That's fine. You're allowed to do that. You're grandfathered in.
At the Chicago Stadium, they lost. I didn't watch the game. I was bowling. My Monday night's my bowling night, but I was following it on the internet. So, what was your sort of overall general thoughts? Were you optimistic, or what were your general thoughts?
No, I wasn't. I mean, it was an undermanned Bucks team. It was a very tall, I mean, they went with the Lopez brothers, so a very tall, more imposing team than the Bulls can march out there, especially with Wendell Carter sidelined still. So you knew size would be a problem. To me, you know, Jim Boylan pointed out after the game, the 38 three-pointers, the 38 free throw attempts, both things he likes to see. So you check those boxes. But I still can't get over the fact that they can't play defense. And that's a concern. So you can talk about pacing and running up the floor more, but at the same time, you have to be able to stop teams. And especially if you deem yourself a playoff team or moving in that playoff direction, come playoff time, it's all about fourth quarter big time stops. And being able to recognize them and understand what you have to do. And it's the same thing. Individual breakdowns, one-on-one breakdowns, help side not coming, communicating. You know, and I know they say, well, our best defensive player is Wendell Carter Jr. He wasn't out there. Okay, well, neither was Giannis, neither was Middleton, neither was Bledsoe. I mean, and so that's concerning, is, you know, that the defense is still an issue. I mean, the defense, I think defensive rating last year was 25th worst, and the year before that, 28th worst. So your first 2 years of the rebuild, you're talking about defensive rating that's near the bottom of the pool of the NBA. And, you know, Jim Boylan was brought in to be a defensive specialist. So that has to change. And I'm not seeing it yet. And I don't know how. You know, they talk about Zach LaVine, who's not a great defender. You know, they're working with him, and Lauri Markkanen is a willing defender, but, you know, one-on-one against Force, he's not always the best. So, and those are two of your starters. So, you know, to me, that's the concerning thing, is it still exists, even though it's only one game, but it was kind of a lot of the same things that we've been seeing.
Well, when you see that they gave up 122 points, and you're right, the stars of Milwaukee, their three best players, did not play in that game.
Right.
And the Bulls gave up 122. Now it's preseason.
Yeah.
The Bulls are playing a lot of people that probably will not get any playing time themselves. So it's hard to draw any conclusions.
And they're looking at lineups and kind of looking at different things to see what what they feel like works and what doesn't. So I get that. But the underlying problem is still you gave up 122 to mostly second teamers for the Bucks.
All right. Well, we'll have to watch that one as it unfolds, because I don't know if ultimately there'd be a commentary on the coaching of Jim Boylan or just the players that they have. You can only ask so much for a coach.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Zach LaVine has been never talked about as being Kobe Bryant on the defensive end. And Lauri Markkanen's never been mistaken for Charles Oakley.
Right.
So that said, all right, Wendell Carter, you had a story in today's paper. Boylan frets over Carter's health issues. Wendell Carter was the number one draft choice last year. He's supposed to be center, the starting center, and yet, hasn't practiced in how many days now?
Well, he played 44 games last year and had the thumb surgery. Then this offseason, you know, he gets over the thumb surgery and, you know, okay, let's restart the development clock. Well, now you can't because you've had this lingering sports hernia since you were 15, and they finally figure out what it was. So he has surgery for that. So instead of playing basketball, he's doing a lot of weightlifting. And you can see that physically. He's, you know, he put on about 15 pounds of muscle, which, you know, okay. Then first day of camp, twists an ankle, doesn't get a full couple days then. Then he comes back, and he gets knocked over by Zach LaVine on a play, lands on his tailbone, and it's a contusion, and it's not healing well. And so, I don't know if the start of the regular season is in jeopardy for him. I don't think it is. It sounds like it's something that, as this week goes on, could come closer to seeing him back on the floor. But again, I mean, now you start saying, all right, you have an undersized center, because I think they list him at 6'11". There's no way he's 6'11". I mean, Lowry, like Robin Lopez is a legit 7-footer.
Yeah.
And Lowry they list Lowry as a 7-footer. He's probably about an inch shorter than Lopez when you saw them back to back in the locker room last year. Wendell looks like 4 inches smaller than Lowry. So I know they list him as 6'10 or 6'11". He's not. And you saw that last year. There were some centers that completely overwhelmed him. I mean, bigger, skilled centers overwhelmed him, and they had to pull him for Lopez. So that's concerning that this thing is lingering, and now all of a sudden you have this big, durable guy that they say is their anchor in the middle who they can't keep on the court.
He's not so durable.
No.
Yeah. There was so much excitement built around the fact that he and Markkanen would be like this 1-2 punch carrying us.
And they were interchangeable because Wendell could actually stretch it out and has a nice mid-range game and actually can shoot threes too. So there was that idea that this is the perfect complementary player for Lowry. And at the same time, they balked up Lowry this offseason saying, okay, we added Thaddeus Young and now all of a sudden Thaddeus could play four. And Lowry could go to the five when they want to go small and go with their kind of version of the death lineup that Golden State runs out there when they want to go with the smaller lineup. And, you know, Wendell might get the break. And now you don't know. I mean, you're just kind of stuck in this unknown. And today, when Wendell talked to us today, he even said, yeah, it's a little frustrating at this point now that this stuff keeps happening. So definitely a wait and see.
Well, here's another thing you should know about Chicago Bulls fans. After a while, they just lose faith in certain players. And so the player that Boylan chose to substitute as a starter in yesterday's preseason game was Felicio.
Right.
And I can tell you this. I know a lot of Bulls fans. They're like, what the hell, Felicio?
Right.
And there's like three other options, Joe, that Boylan could go with. Just Wendell Carter, he's got this minor injury, looks like a minor injury, day to day, whatever they say. But you could go with Thaddeus Young. You could go with the rookie. I call him Daniel Gafford. You know what I'm saying?
Gafford's really, they're not coming out and saying it, but Gafford's really overwhelmed right now.
He had a pretty good, he had some points last night.
Yeah, but he, in practice and kind of understanding what they want, he is really raw and really overwhelmed right now.
More overwhelmed than Felicio.
Well, Felicio, by all accounts, Felicio's had a good first week of camp. And the bottom line is you could also be saying there's no way we can ever get out from underneath this contract. So if he has a good week, reward him and keep him confident. Otherwise, I think he is the – going into this offseason before they signed guys, he was the second highest paid guy on the team. Think about that.
Well, that may qualify as one of the worst decisions by a general manager.
That was Gar Forman saying, century. I am smarter than all of you, and watch me extend this guy for the cheap and watch what he develops into. And they realize that all of a sudden he basically God put feet where his hands are supposed to be because he can't catch the ball. And then yesterday he has goggles on. So you're telling me you just figured out for the last 3 years this guy couldn't see? I mean, so now you figured out it was the eyesight. So now he's wearing goggles. It's a whole new guy now.
All right, let me just say this. You're going to learn this about me, Joe. A very stubborn guy. Having heard everything you just said about Felicio and the Bulls signing him, I still say the decision by the Bears to pass Patrick Mahomes to trade up from... I'm sorry, have you seen Patrick Mahomes? It's not like the Bulls gave up on Joel Embiid to sign, Felicio.
I'm not ready to put Trubisky in the Ryan Leaf department yet. So
I would put him in the Rex Grossman category. Are you old enough to remember Rex Grossman?
Yeah.
He took him to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. See, I think he's a little more talented than Rex. I think he is more athletic than Rex.
There's a certain Sun-Times editor I won't name who I see walking around the building. I don't even know if you know this guy. He's a Bear diehard. All you have to do to make him just like go crazy.
Just say
Patrick Mahomes. Don't talk to me. I'm on deadline. I can't talk. Guy goes, breaks down. Anyway, back to the Bulls. All right. Speaking for Bulls fans everywhere. I like Felicio's. I mean, I've seen his interview. I don't know him personally, but right. I've seen his interviews. He seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, it's not his fault that Gar overestimated his talent.
Yeah, that is correct. And God bless him for taking the money. Got his money, and it's good for him. I just was like, why are you starting somebody else? Why Felicio? But I see your point. Okay, they want to reward him for working hard and getting the glasses. All right, let's get to Chris Dunn. We're going down the list of Bulls players that fans are perplexed by. He, of course, was a part of the Jimmy Butler trade. They got him and Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine in that trade.
Right. So, he was deemed the original core.
And I say this. I may have told you this last time on your show. I remember watching the Bulls. Chris Dunn was playing really well. They were playing the Golden State Warriors, the champion Golden State Warriors, in the Chicago Stadium. The Bulls were making a run at the Warriors, and Chris Dunn was playing great defense. He stole the ball. He went in for a dunk, and he hung on the rim a little too long. And he fell face first.
Got the trampoline effect, and it shot him off. He landed on his face.
Is it my imagination, or he's not been the same since?
Well, he's had a series of injuries since. I think it's been the problem. And the thing is that's kind of, head-scratching is when are you injury-prone or when is everything just a freak accident? And he's had more freak things happen than injury-prone. So here's the thing I'll say about Chris Dunn. And I wrote this, I think either I've written this a couple times. They thought after the exit meeting, when they told him we are bringing in point guards this offseason, whether it's the draft or free agency, they thought he checked out. They thought he was gone. And to his credit, his dad's, I did a story on him one time. It was when the whole Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball and all that stuff was hot a couple years ago, and we were out in California. And he's like, yeah, I have no problem with the way that dad has raised that son, because my dad raised me probably even harder, but he's just not out there talking about it. That was the only difference. So his dad's a hardcore, tough dude. And if you know Chris Dunn's background, before his dad was back in his life, the mom was put in prison. It was just he and his brother on the streets, not letting anyone know that no one was taking care of him. And his older brother would bring him to these games, and he's 10, 11 years old, and have him play one-on-one against 14 or 15-year-olds that, have gang backgrounds, lying that they had money to back the bet when they didn't have money. And so when you talk to Chris Dunn about pressure, he's like, that's pressure. Because I know if I don't win this game, someone may get shot because we don't have the money to make this bet. So, but he was just that kind of player as a young guy. So, they thought he checked out, and they even said Chris Dunn's checked out, and they were shopping him. It's just they were going to get back a penny on a dime. And it's one thing, penny on a nickel, but this was on a dime, a guy that they deemed core, and they overvalue their guys at times, but I get it, where they just said, hey, he's a defensive guy, defense is still a problem, let's keep him around, see what happens. To Chris Dunn's credit, he went home, whether it was the old man or whether it was his camp, they got his head straight and told him, don't go in there taking it personal, but don't understand that it's still business. And so he's come back like a completely different guy, the way he's talking to us, the way he is conducting himself. So now maybe it's maturity, maybe it's kind of understand the situation, or maybe he understands, look, the NBA is about playing well, and maybe it's not always for your team. Maybe it's showcasing for other teams. And so, you know, and having an opportunity somewhere else. So I think that all clicked for him. So I'm kind of excited to see what he does, you know, the rest of this preseason and going into the regular season, and if he has, if he can keep that mentality. So, you know, that's the one thing I'll say about Dunn, is that shocked me. I think the organization was a little surprised too, that he came back in September with a clear head saying, all right, you guys got these guys. You know, I'm going to take it personal, but I'm not going to hold a grudge.
Well, he was 5-for-8. I'm reading your article last night. 5-for-8 from the
field. Yeah, had a slow start and then actually played fairly well.
There's something about Chris Dunn that I really like, and I think it's based on stories I've read in the Sun-Times that you wrote about his background and right. how much he's had to overcome. And I just I feel for him because, like I said, that year, I think it was 18 year, he was showing so much potential.
Yeah, he and Lowry were just, I mean, Zach wasn't, you know, was still out or was dealing with the knee still, and he and Lowry just were clicking for like 3 weeks, and he was closing out games for him. I mean, he was their closer. It wasn't Lowry, it was Dunn that was closing out games for him in tough situations, making big baskets. And all of a sudden he has that thing at the rim when it was a really good game. I remember it was really intense, and he just kind of grabbed down the rim and hung on it wrong, and it just bam. Trampolined him and right on his face.
Yeah, right on his face. And then he was out for about 3 weeks, I want to say.
Yeah, and since then, it's kind of just been a series of injuries.
All right, this wasn't on my list, but you mentioned him. Lowry Markkanen, excuse me. The great Finnish basketball player by way of Arizona. The Bulls took him a couple of years ago. If there's a potential that the Bulls have, he is it, Joe.
Has to be it. He and Zach have to be superstars. That's the way they built their roster.
Superstars. Wow.
If you have playoff aspirations and you have a rebuild that you promised is going to be a rebuild towards a championship, because that's what you promised. You were tired of Jimmy Butler and getting to the first or second round, so you wanted to blow it up and build a championship team. That's not my quote. That's coming out of that front office. So to build a championship team, you need elite superstar players and at least two of them. And they've deemed Lowry Markkanen and Zach LaVine those two, not only with the contracts that they gave Zach, but this offseason, the free agency. Those they had money and they spent it on background players that kind of help elevate those two, role players that will help elevate those two. It wasn't, let's go out and get a third superstar somehow. It was, let's build around them and elevate those two. So all the chips are on the table. And the way their contracts are set, when you think about it, you know, Thaddeus and Zach and Santoransky, all their contracts end the same time. Otto's ends a year earlier. Hmm. He's got, you know, this year, and then he's got
Otto
the player.
Porter,
Otto Porter. He's got the player option next year, which he undoubtedly will option in at it. I think it's $28 million, so he's not going to get that on the open market. So you have said this is our roster for at least the next two seasons, but Zach and Lowry are the full commit.
All right. So have you seen enough to say to say this guy is superstar material?
February was pretty special. Last February for Lowry was pretty special. I think 26, 12, 30, or 42% from the field and really well from three-point range, was bringing the ball up, was rebounding, pushing the pace. But then you have to go back and you say, okay, well, who did he play? Who was sitting? It's February. You're doing this before the All-Star break and after the All-Star break, you know, when it's a little easier for guys to kind of let go of the rope one way or the other. The trade deadline's in there. So those are things you have to weigh. But 11 games span in February is still 11 games. There's still professional players out there. So for him to put up those numbers excited the Bulls, excited you about the potential of Lowry Markkanen. Those are unicorn numbers for a 7-footer. Mm-hmm. And so I'd rather have Lowry Markkanen than Porzingis right now. I mean, I'll say that. You know, everyone talks about this hype around Porzingis.
Yeah.
Is Lowry going to be Dirk? I don't think they're the same type of player. I see some of the comparisons that people talk about. What we see from Lowry, though, like we'll come in late in practices and stuff and shoot arounds. Some of the stuff he does athletically, he doesn't do on the floor yet. I would like to see him move in that direction because this dude, I mean, he can handle, he can dunk, he can play with power around the rim. And I think right now he's almost typecasting himself into this pick and pop long range shooter where, you know, he's added this muscle now. So now I would like to see a little bit more around the rim. And I would like to see that he's got really good handles. I mean, he can, and he's athletic and more than he shows in the actual games. We see it on the practice floor, or we see it late in shoot arounds. I'd like to see that translate a little bit more to the court now.
By the way, you talk about seeing it on practice. Are reporters allowed to
watch? No, I mean, we get in there and we'll get to see like the last X amount of minutes of a shoot around or, you know, every so often you'll get a glimpse of stuff, but lots of times it's just guys doing one-on-one stuff or, you know, in Lowry's case, the first time I seen how athletic he was just goofing around. We were at the Wooden, we were in Los Angeles in the Wooden Arena, the practice facility there at UCLA, and he was doing stuff that I had no idea he can do. You know, between the legs and dunk and just athletic ability we haven't really seen from him translate to on the floor.
Well, one of the concerns that a lot of Bulls fans have is for some reason, either he doesn't force the other players to give him the ball, doesn't demand the ball. That's what I'm thinking of. Or the others just ignore him. So many times I'm watching a guard dribble, dribble, dribble. You talk about not playing defense. I'd rather dribble, dribble, dribble. You got Lauri Markkanen.
That's why they wanted Markkanen to bring the ball up himself because they felt he's the best facilitator for himself. And what they need to show is, okay, you deemed Zach and Lowry your two superstars. Those two don't really play that well together. They had moments last February where they played well together, but a lot of Lowry's success came when it was Dunn and Lowry because Dunn has a pass-first mentality. I want to see it happen in the fourth quarter of close games where Zach has the ball in his hands but has enough confidence to play pick and roll with Lowry and produce something, whether it's him producing it or Lowry, you know, going pick and pop, pick and roll. That's where I want to see it. And we haven't seen enough of that because they're never on the floor together. One of them's always injured or one of them's, you know, and so we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
For guys that have been together for this long, we have barely seen those two play together successfully.
By the way, total tangent here. You mentioned Lauri Markkanen. We're talking Lauri Markkanen. He got his big break in, part because about 2 years ago,
the punt.
Bobby Portis slugged Mirotić,
yeah.
And in doing so, knocked Mirotić out for a month, I think.
It was longer than
more
that.
More than that, okay, with that.
And then concussion. got suspended,
and then so Lauri got elevated. What was that all about? That fight between
Bobby. That had been a couple years brewing. Nico came and was instantly kind of embraced. Here's the funny thing. Pau Gasol is, here's why I love Pau Gasol. This dude is the biggest crap stirrer in any locker room and has his fingerprints on nothing. He is so good. I mean, look, he played alongside Kobe and is one of the few guys that talks about getting along with Kobe because everybody hates Kobe. So then you're like, oh, well, that must be Powell's a really good guy. No, Powell's just really good at probably pinning stuff on other guys and him always looking clean. So I'll give him credit for that because, you know, oh, Powell's a Renaissance man. He dates this Spanish model and he's going to operas. This dude stirs up more than anybody but never gets his hands dirty.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, Powell and Nico instantly had a good relationship and Powell was considered a veteran leader in there. And I think Nico probably was elevated because it was Powell's guy and he was a professional guy. Whether he's playing his rookie season, he's still, those Europeans come over, they're still professional. They've been playing since they were 12, 13,
yeah.
You know, with professional guys. So I think Nico had some kind of self-inflated ego. And now you get a rookie in Bobby Portis. Well, I see how the older guys haze these. I'm going to haze Bobby Portis. And I think that went on for a year or two where Nico was always kind of saying stuff to Bobby and stuff. Bobby's not about that life.
Yeah.
And that was, put it this way, there weren't a lot of guys upset when Bobby did that. It isn't like Nico was the popular guy in the locker room. And, you know, I think Pa was gone then when that happened, too. So now he doesn't have his bodyguard and stuff like that. So,
yes, he was. He was gone by
then. Yeah. So that was kind of a long time in the making. And should it have ended that way? No. I would have loved to see. I've talked to some of the people that saw the tape of it. Uh-huh. And it wasn't a wind-up punch. It was just a boom, just a jab that just, you know, connected, you know, Sonny Liston, you know, Cassius Clay style, where you couldn't see it, but it hit, and it hit in a bad spot.
Well, the interesting thing was the Bulls did not punish Bobby Portis. I mean, he was, he was suspended for 8 games.
Bulls.
Yeah, by the Bulls.
The NBA basically, before the NBA could put their punishment, the Bulls did it.
Yeah, what I'm saying, they didn't immediately get rid of him. In other words.
No.
They didn't blame him.
No. For having a guy sent to the hospital and concussed, they were very much like, Nico was an aggressor in that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can tell. So what I've been told is the front office was pissed more at Fred Hoiberg that he always pitted those two against each other in practice and let this thing kind of get to that point rather than mix teams around. Yes, they're competing for the same spot, but you could still let them play together. And the funny thing is when Nico did come back, you remember Nico was unbelievable, but Bobby's game and those two played so well together. And I think that even ticked off more of the front office saying, well, why weren't you doing this in practice instead of having these guys always butt heads? Why didn't you do this earlier in practice? So this resentment didn't build. And so,
if there's been a golden era of Chicago Bulls basketball, I'm laughing as I say this, Joe, since the 2015 debacle in Game 6 at the Chicago Stadium, United Center. It was 10 games where the Bulls were actually
When Nico came back Nico and was telling back. Teams before the game, Nico's going to beat your ass tonight.
And then typical, all the writers, everybody's like, no, don't win. You're supposed to be tanking.
Yeah.
Except for me. Diehard Bulls.
And Nico was smart. He came in and said, I don't want to be here, but I'm just going to play for Nico. And he did.
Yeah.
But in doing so, you know, basketball is one of those sports where you can be selfish, but also elevate other people's games, obviously.
And well, Nico is in Europe right now.
Yeah, he went back to Europe.
So. All right. Let's talk about promising rookies. Let's give some hope to Bulls fans, all right? Diehard Bull fans out there. Are there any promising rookies on this team that we can look forward to?
Well, I mean, it's the obvious. It's when you draft a guy 7th overall, you are hoping that he has promise. I still don't understand what he is going to be.
You're talking about
Coby White. Now, I understand that the NBA has become positionless in a lot of ways, but the elite teams still have that killer point guard. And so they can downplay, we have multi-ball handlers and we don't need a true point guard. That's like a team that doesn't have a quarterback. You got 3 of them, but you don't have a good one. I have to see what he could become. He went to Carolina as a 2-guard. And kind of got thrown in the point guard role. He was drafted. When they drafted him, they said he's a point guard. But he's really not a point guard. So I have to see exactly what he becomes, what he is. At some point, especially like we talked about, if you make it to the playoffs late in games, you're not going to be able to run on teams. At some point, you need a guy that gets you in your set and understands the offense and where guys are supposed to be and where guys like the ball and where guys can have the most success. You need that guy. And I don't know if Coby White is going to be that guy. So is he a backup too? Is he a kind of just a guard and you put him out there and you give him his 20 some minutes and whenever he does, he just plays at a high speed and pushes the offense and you let him do that? He can shoot. He showed he was a shooter in college. He hasn't shown in the NBA. Mm-hmm. 3-for-30 in summer league.
No, summer league was terrible. Yeah.
It was awful. Supposedly it's gotten better. I think he hit a 3 yesterday?
I don't know.
If he did or not.
I don't think so, I don't know.
Dunn hit a 3. I knew that. So, and this is a guy that you're like, okay, well, we know late in game Zach, if he has the ball in his hands, Dunn's not a threat to be that corner 3 guy, but Coby White is.
Well,
not yet. So I don't know what he is. I don't know what he's going to be. I know he's fast. I know he's athletic. But I'm not looking. I don't think he's going to be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. I mean, they're going to try to get him his 15, 20 minutes a game.
To develop him.
But I don't think, you know, if Coby White's playing 28, 30 minutes a game, something went very wrong with someone.
Mm-hmm. Or there's an injury. And there's at least,
yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Zach's down. Satoransky's down. Dunn's down. Somebody's down.
Yeah.
So.
Or Dunn's been traded.
Yeah.
You've written this several times, that the Bulls are giving Dunn an opportunity just to sort of market him, if you will.
Right.
Him.
I mean, because they have to make a they could start having to make a financial decision with Dunn. And before it gets to that point, you want to see if you could get something for him.
All right. Well, we'll close it down with this. Speaking of rookies of the year, last night was also Zion Williamson's first game. He's not a Bull, everybody. He's with the Pelicans, New Orleans Pelicans. The Bulls could not somehow win the lottery last year, Joe. Once again, the Bulls failed at the lottery. So I know you have a story you have to get out and write about Zion Williamson. Why don't you scoop yourself a little bit? What's your initial thoughts about Zion?
Well, I've always kind of just been – I thought he is a complete organizational changer. You know, refrigerators aren't supposed to fly. God isn't supposed to make a man that's 6'6", 285 with 46-inch vertical leap. It's just not supposed to physically happen. I don't know what he is or what he will become, but I know he's special. I know he, you know, Barack Obama and LeBron James don't fly to Cameron Arena to watch a college kid play because he's not special. So, you know, we talked to Wendell Carter, who was, you know, had friends that were still on the Duke team last year and was raving about Zion. Not just the player, the person, you know, special guy, gets it, understands work ethic. You know, I mean, if his career goes wrong, it's going to be because those knees couldn't hold up that body. Otherwise, I think he is. I mean, you can't compare him to LeBron James. It's not even, it's a totally different type of player. But from an excitement standpoint and the juice he brings to an organization, that's where you can make in a comparison that this might be the most exciting prospect since LeBron James. So what that becomes, we'll all see. But I mean, you know, I was all in on the organization doing everything they could last year to make sure they had that highest chance of getting him. And you still didn't have the greatest chance, as we all found out on draft day when all those, all three teams slipped out of it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but to me, you know, you want the prettiest girl, you got to at least be on the dance floor asking, you know what I mean? And
is there anybody out there right now that you would say, oh, the Bulls should tank this year?
No, this isn't, okay. There's no one like
him. There's no
him.
Tanking. No. The Bulls blew it last year.
No, I mean, there's no one like him. You know what I mean? There was no one that just stood out where you were like, whoa. So,
well, they were showing his, I didn't see the game, but they were showing the highlights. It was on the TV at the bowling alley last night. And everybody was like, oh my God, what? You know, unbelievable dunks. And,
grown men moving out of his way.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather not, that's a business decision I don't want to take.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited to see what he looks like in person. But more so, I just want to see what he develops, how he develops, what he becomes in the NBA.
Bulls play them next, correct?
Tomorrow. Wednesday,
at the United Center?
Although this doesn't run until Saturday. So the game already happened, and he was phenomenal. Let me tell you.
Joe probably won't even play tomorrow. The future, and he is predicting big things from Zion Williamson. All right, Joe Colley, folks want to get a hold of you, give a handle or whatever, where they can go to get in contact with you. If you want them to contact you,
no,
you may
I
not
don't.
Want
Just
them.
Email you.
All right.
If you want to contact me, email.
Ben Jarofsky. All right, I'll pass the message. All right, his name is Joe Colley. Covers the Bulls for my beloved Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times. He does a great job. I've now had him on the show twice. I think he should have his own podcast, but as long as he doesn't have his own podcast, I'll just keep bringing him back to mind.
Anytime, anytime.
All right, great. I'm Ben Jarofsky. That's Joe Colley. Take care, everybody.